This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
All right, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Dark to Light with me, Spooky Bone. Spooky Bone Frank. And, of course, the ghost of Christmas Tracy. I'm getting all my holidays mixed up. Of course, I'm just sitting here in my delusional state all alone, just talking to myself once again. But I have been accustomed to doing this. I've trained myself to speak to only myself for years now, so that when times like this arrive, I'm ready to go. And it is the Dark to Light final broadcast podcast edition before Halloween. I'm going to be doing the next couple of minutes alone because Tracy is off in DC. She's been there all week preparing for this weekend's Walkaway March. I will be at that march after tonight's 7 o'clock broadcast for, quite frankly, I will be hitting the road with some of the guys, and we will be bringing our unstoppable male energy down to DC, where male energy is needed so badly. So that just pissed a few people off. I don't know. But listen, everybody, it's so great to have you on listening. We wanted to do something to bridge the gap, so you had something to hold on to. And we'll see what goes on. It's going to be a little bit open-ended, a little bit, hey, what the hell's going on out there? What are the topics today? What are the big topics of the week? Well, it's been a slow news week, aside from a few things. We have three stories that I see that are piled on top of each other that are designed purely to take the place of the number one fact that there are no ideas and there are no proposals. There's nothing going on with the left in any kind of meaningful way. They have no real ideas to give to people. They have no alternatives. The alternatives for what? We have an economy that is strong. I'm not talking about the stock market. I don't know anything about the stock market. When Obama was in office, they were like, oh, it's up, it's down, it's down. Whether it was up or down, I always say, listen, I mean, presidents have very little to do with stock market volatility or anything like that. There's trillions of dollars of funny money that has been pumped into the stock market. So it doesn't really do anything for me. What I can say is that there is a verifiable link between consumer confidence and between the way that people are conducting themselves, between the way that businesses are opening themselves up and reinvesting in their country, in their domestic operations. There are things that you can definitely attribute to a president and to their agenda and to the way that they interact with the public and the way that they put their agenda out there. So there's that. And since that, there is undeniable positive things that are coming out of the news, coming out of the economy, coming out of everything. What are you really going to propose? You're going to propose to stop any of that? No, you can't do that stuff. Even if Democrats got control of the House, what are they going to do? Impeachment is a loser. That is a big time loser. They're going to keep going on with that. This Russia thing is a big time loser. They're going to open up five more investigations into that. That's going to help them. They would lose the House again in 2020. If they somehow got the House this time around and they committed to all of the obstructionist investigation nonsense that they say is really the biggest thing that they can give everybody, they would lose the House again in 2020. It's ridiculous. They have nothing. The only other thing that they have is raising taxes. And instead of encouraging people to snag one of the millions of jobs that are now open, they want to raise taxes, shrink up the private sector once again, and redistribute wealth to people who should just probably go out there and reestablish some kind of a work ethic and a different type of routine of being independent again. But of course, as we know, The plan is keep people dependent. The plan is keep people scared. The plan is keep chaos brewing. And since they only have one horse left to ride, and that is their failing, embarrassing media, that's what we're doing. We're talking about fear. We're talking about chaos. And there are three stories right now that are piled on top of each other at the same time. There is this, I don't even know which side to take and why I should care, on this Khashoggi guy out there in Saudi Arabia. All I know is that it's being used to drive a wedge between the president and what seems to be a newly forming or a newly revised relationship with Saudi Arabia and whatever the plan is out there in the Middle East. And hopefully to get ourselves out of that quagmire and allow the region just to do what it wants with itself. So there's that. And then, of course, there is this migrant horde that is making its way up Mexico right now toward our border. And, of course, there's that. And Democrats are completely silent on that as well, because they know that's a big loser if they start saying that this is a good thing. So there's the migrant horde. There's a Saudi Arabia nonsense. And then now there's just bombs. Did anybody at home get their suspicious package? Everybody in the country has been getting suspicious packages. Except me. I didn't get one yet. Did anybody else get theirs? So that's what's going on right now. And of course, it's all very conveniently Democrat. And we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. But there is one bit of news that I think Tracy would have liked to cover today. And I'm just going to put it out there a little bit open-ended, just to let you know what's going on, so that next week when we get back on the air, I'm sure Tracy and I will be able to go into depth. Now, before I go into anything, I want to give you a definition of the word patsy. When you hear somebody say, oh, this so-and-so is a patsy, or he was made into a patsy, and, you know, Oswald was a patsy, what does that mean? A patsy is a person that is easily taken advantage of, who is cheated or blamed or ridiculed in some way, made into a scapegoat for a larger scheme that they really have no stake in. Okay? They're used. A plant, on the other side, on the other hand, a plant is your classic double agent type. Okay, that's the type of person that a plant is. Someone like an Alexander Downer, a Joseph Mifsud, a Stefan Halper. Those are the types of plants you have. People who are in there, who are in the know. They know what they're doing. Maybe sometimes they're a little bit more compartmentalized than others, but they're in there to perform a certain task. And of course, they're in there to be a cog in the overall greater scheme that is at large. Whatever the scheme is, it changes from place to place, whatever. But you know what we're talking about at this point. Now, George Papadopoulos is back in the news again. Mark Meadows puts this out couple days ago. He says George Papadopoulos, the supposed key informant, told the FBI there was no collusion before the FISA warrant and the FBI before the FISA warrant was issued, and the FBI omitted that exculpatory information from the application anyway. With all we've learned about the FISA abuses, this is deeply, deeply troubling. And of course, it is linked to another article from The Hill by none other than John Solomon, who should get any kind of prize. I don't care about awards and prizes and all that stuff, but if anybody should get an award this year, it's John Solomon. Just a little bit on this. Ready? From John Solomon. Just weeks after the FBI opened a dramatic counterintelligence probe into President Trump and Russia, one of his presidential campaign advisors emphatically told an undercover bureau source there was no election collusion occurring because such activity would be treasonous. George Papadopoulos says his spontaneous admission to London-based professor Stefan Halper occurred in mid-September 2016, well before FBI agents and the Obama Justice Department sought a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant to collect Trump campaign communications in the final days before the election. Quote, he was there to probe me on the behest of someone else, end quote. Papadopoulos told me in an interview this week, recalling the Halper meeting. He said something along the lines of, oh, it's great that Russia is helping you and your campaign, right, George? Which is ridiculous. When I heard that line, first of all, when I heard that line, I'm saying to myself, oh, this is so stupid. This is, can you imagine? I can just hear that. I can just hear that coming out. it's like it's such a lame attempt to try to get somebody to say something. Oh, isn't it? Stefan Halper should have said something like, kicking back, sipping on a cocktail. Isn't it great being a criminal, George? I mean, wouldn't you agree? Like he expected George to say, it sure does, Mr. Halper. Committing crime is my favorite. You know, but they needed something. They needed anything. They were prepared to omit whatever needed to be omitted. They were lying to the courts. Why the hell would they? I mean, come on. So this continues just a little bit more. It goes on. You should all read the article for yourself. It's too long for me to spend all time reading it. But he was there to probe me on the behest of someone else, he said. Papadopoulos told Halper also, he said that Halper also suggested that the Trump campaign was involved in the hacking and release of Hillary Clinton's emails in that summer. Quote, I think I told him something along the lines of, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. What you are talking about is treason. I have nothing to do with that, so stop bothering me with it. Papadopoulos recalled. The former campaign aide is set to testify behind closed doors Thursday before two House panels. That was yesterday. Sources who saw the FISA warrant and its three renewals tell me there is no mention of Papadopoulos' denial, an omission of exculpatory evidence that GOP critics in Congress are likely to cite as having misled the court. A source directly familiar with the Russian probe declined to discuss specifics of the Papadopoulos-Halper conversation, but acknowledged the FBI possessed one or more transcripts that called into question the Trump campaign and specifically Papadopoulos' alleged complicity with Russia. So this is going on, and George Papadopoulos is getting more and more brazen about not only that, but the timeline in which and the more and more suspicious circumstances that had popped up around even just the out of the blue interaction with Joseph Mifsud, who showed up just in time to drop some dirt, some vague Hillary Clinton dirt in George Papadopoulos' lap. To which end he was then fed off to a number of weird contacts in London, including Stefan Halper and Alexander Downer, who were probably just trying to get the laundered rumor, from Joseph Mifsud out of George Papadopoulos. Once you get it to come out of George Papadopoulos, then you have something to build suspicion on. So there you go. So this guy is, and he's becoming more and more brazen here to the point where he now is thinking about withdrawing the deal that he made with the government that led to his paltry 2-week sentence. All right. You would think that if you did something wrong, and after all that, all you did was have to spend 2 weeks in a jail. Oh, man, I'd say, hey, please. 2 weeks is better than 10 years if I was part of some collusion scheme. Please give it to me. But now he's saying, I may not even want to spend a day in jail. This is nonsense. I was obviously passed from one person to the next, and none of this makes any sense. So there you go. That's where we're at with that. You know, and let me tell you something, and believe me, there were times I thought George Papadopoulos was a patsy. That's what I thought at first. Then I thought he was a plant. And then I thought he was a plant turned patsy. All right. And you know, but all of that is semantics. And anybody who really gets themselves caught up with what is true intentions in there is really just missing the point, because patsy or plant, the circumstances surrounding George Papadopoulos and Carter Page have torpedoed the entire Russia collusion story from the beginning. Why Robert Mueller is supposedly zeroing in on Roger Stone right now is like, I don't know. I don't even care. It's completely disinteresting to me. They rung up General Flynn, who still hasn't been sentenced because the whole thing is probably going to get thrown out too. Paul Manafort, who is a man who happened to have committed some real financial crimes. All of that was unearthed during a phony investigation. Crimes that were not only wholly unrelated to Trump, but may have been based on ill-gotten evidence from FinCEN, as we discussed last week regarding the arrest at the Treasury Department. And now we have George Papadopoulos, who now may even fight his paltry 2-week sentence that he was given for lying to the FBI. And when you get this sentence, lying to the FBI, I saw some idiot commenters on Twitter saying maybe he's getting his sentence because he lied about collusion to the FBI. Maybe that's why, because he lied about collusion. No, he didn't. If you sit down with the FBI and you're talking about whether or, you know, circumstances that may prove or disprove that there was collusion between a foreign entity and a domestic entity or anything else. Just to anything. I don't know. There's another kind of investigation going on. And during that investigation, during that interview, you say anything that does not match up with something you said before. It could be about the timing in which you went to the bathroom. I took a bathroom break that day, but it turns out he never went to the bathroom that day. That something like that is how you can get rung up on this stuff. So to say that, but of course, this is all just about building suspicion. You know, the 2-week sentence was given for lying to the FBI. And as you can see, it's very easy to get this charge levied on a person, which has been what this whole thing has been about from the beginning. Creating suspicion through intelligence circles and washing it through the media to launch probes and investigations and play for inconsistencies and play on to try to get people in perjury traps. That's why I've been saying from the beginning. And I'm glad that President never sat down with Mueller. It's always been baiting. I will say this. The president, I know everybody wants to say that everything he does is four-dimensional chess. But there are some things that I say 100% he played perfectly. Throughout this entire time, he has allowed the media to wonder and ponder openly whether or not he's going to fire Mueller. Which, of course, he never was going to. But it gave him something to write about. Gave them something to hyperventilate about. And also, the entire time, teasing. Yeah, sure, I'd love to sit down with Mueller and have a talk with him. Sure, I'd love to do that. And of course, backing off and then talking about the reasons or the circumstances that would need to be met for him to sit down. And, well, you know, what would the rules of this be? It's just been one big, you know, ballet dance. Been really great. So, this is what I wanted to open up there. There's a little bit interesting. There's more and more interesting stuff going on. And George Papadopoulos, he's part of this game now. It's bigger than we had originally thought. Good stuff. Okay, so that being out of the way, let's talk about the big thing for the week. Apparently, we may have an arrest as of right now. FBI arrests one person in connection with the mail bombs. So a suspect is in custody. We don't know too much about that. That is as of 11:51 a.m. Eastern time on Friday morning. Now, while we watch that all come out and do its thing, I do want to speak a little bit plainly about my thoughts on all this stuff. And I spoke a little bit about this last night on my own show, and I just want to put it on out there for a new audience, because I know that there's a little bit of an overlap between audiences, but this has its own real, you know, dedicated audience on Dark to Light. And I want to put some thoughts out there. Now, it's been 24/7 coverage of this bombing stuff, or these failed bombs, these Snicker bars with random wires sticking out of it, whatever the hell they are. And you have Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo making out on the sidewalk, praying for, oh, I'm so glad you're, oh, I love you, brother. Love you, brother. You know, everybody's broadcasting from the sidewalk just to show everybody at home, the five people who are watching CNN from all of the international airports from coast to coast, because that's where all of their views come from. The five people who are watching CNN at home, they needed to see, look, this is how normalcy, this is how everyday life has been shaken up by for us. We're out here. We feel safer on the street corners than we do in our own studio. Damn you, Trump. Damn you! So there's that. And I just want everybody at home to think about this. Think about this. Because, you know, whoever it is whoever it is. But let's just think about this. What do Democrats have to offer as opposed to Donald Trump right now? What do they have to offer the country as opposed to Donald Trump? Now, I did not vote for Donald Trump in the primaries. I voted for Ted Cruz. He was the only one really talking about the Constitution still at that time. Before Ted Cruz, I was pulling for Rand Paul. When it came time for the election, I voted for Donald Trump, and I said, hey, I am going to be cautiously optimistic about the unknown quantity that is Donald Trump, as opposed to the known quantity that is Hillary Clinton. And I knew that the Supreme Court was far too important to just let it slip by the wayside. So one other thing I would like to say before I get started with all this stuff is, too, that because of how crazy the media is and how crazy the American left is, I'm resentful, even more resentful of them for forcing me to spend most of my time defending Donald Trump against the craziness instead of being able to spend some time about talking about policy and what policy is good, what policy could be made better, what's not good at all. You know, he still has a very progressive New York City Democrat, you know, willing to make sides with make deals with both sides type of a streak in him. He's not a conservative in a traditional sense or anything like that. There's no philosophical grounding there. He's not an ideologue. In fact, that was the biggest reason why I said he wasn't Hitler. For everybody said he's Hitler. So what are you talking about? Hitler was bound to an ideology. Donald Trump wants to make deals with everybody. There was something for everybody to gain from this presidency. But I ask you once again, what do Democrats have to offer as opposed to Trump, especially at this point where it's just been obstruction, it's just been resistance, it's been calling for violence, calling for physical intimidation, calling for incivility? You know, Donald Trump, and just looking at these rallies and knowing and just reading the news and trying to detach passion from any of this, to try to be dispassionate about the way that we look at all this stuff, Donald Trump gives voters, his voters at least, confidence and assurances through being effective. Effective. Not by bloviating and saying things that are empty and all that. He's effective. He's got the pomp and the circus. There's a dog and pony show, and he's a performer. He's been in show business his whole life. But that is how he sells things that he's really intent on achieving. Now, he's doing much of what he said he would do with no signs of slowing down. Now, you at home, and I know many people would be happy with this, but you at home might be a skeptical observer of all this, and you may not like what he wants to do in the country, policy-wise and otherwise. But it is imperative to understand that this effectiveness is what inspires confidence in his supporters, and more importantly, that is what has led to abject panic in his opponents. Okay? Effectiveness. Now, I don't know about you, but I have observed in the short amount of time I've been on this earth that a confident person rarely panics, and a panicked person is rarely confident. So who is more likely to do something stupid right now in the week and a half leading up to a midterm election? Who? Who? The side with all the momentum, the side that has actual verified victories on the books, the side that is not looking like seething, drooling idiots. And when they're not drooling with hatred, they're quivering and crying on television. Which side is more prone and likely to do something stupid right now? I had a commenter 2 days ago tell me that Republicans would do something like this because they're desperate. But in reality, they're in great shape. That's just being objective. That may be another reason why progressives are angry, because they are in great shape. They feel it slipping away. They're losing the narrative. They're losing control, the iron grip control on the culture now. Now, unless you're part of the blue wave Twitter brigade, everyone else has greatly tempered their expectations for Election Day. Everyone else. Bernie Sanders says he doesn't believe in the blue wave. Chuck Schumer had to say, well, it's going to be a lot closer than we think. I mean, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So you really think about this. Who's confident? The blue wave, blue tsunami thing was a hashtag to keep people who are on a losing side, who obviously were kept from really seeing which direction the wind was blowing, from seeing where the hell it was going. keeping them confident in something that wasn't there. Keep writing your letters to Santa Claus, you know? And in the meantime, we have Bill Maher, who openly prays on his show for a recession, an economic recession, because he knows things are going well. He wants bad. They want bad things to happen. Everybody prayed that North Korea, after they took a break, of course, from praising North Korea's diplomatic one-upsmanship at the Winter Olympics in February. Then, of course, it was rooting against the president to fail in North Korea, which was at one point a nuclear threat. So they have been wanting disaster, even though that means that disaster would bring down calamity on the ship that they are currently sailing in. They're suicidal lemmings. And then you have scores of people like Maxine Waters encouraging others to form mobs and chase people out of restaurants and gas stations and bars. Madonna and her dreams of blowing up the White House. That junkie Johnny Depp dreaming of a new John Wilkes Booth movement. Hillary Clinton says that there's no civility until we are in sole possession of government again. We see the protests, the deplatforming on college campuses. Weaponization of sexual assault claims. And then you have these networks that have long been beating the entire public over the head with racism on a nightly basis, but now they're upping it. Now they're upping it. So you tell me whose mind is set on bully tactics and street fighting right now? Whose mindset is that? You know, they're just threatened. They're just threatened that they finally met someone, Donald Trump, who is as rude as they are. Okay? He is delightfully rude because they have been rude for so many years. And finally, here's a guy who is rude as they are, and he's winning handily. So now they're left with acting like Jim Carrey in Liar Liar. You ever see Jim Carrey's film Liar Liar? It's actually a great film. It's hilarious. Where they can't lie for a day. He can't lie for a day, and he's trying to figure out a way to get out of a court appearance because he's a lawyer, and he knows that his time in court is going to be disastrous if he can't lie to spin a narrative. It's going to be disastrous. So what does he do? He asks for a short bathroom break. He goes to the bathroom, and he starts beating the shit out of himself. He starts beating the shit out of himself in the bathroom to make it seem like somebody had assaulted him. We need a continuance with this court date. I just need some time to run the clock out so I can come back in and take control of the narrative again. Well, everything is about running the clock out and getting past the midterm goal line. That's it. Everything's about it. And the best thing about that Liar Liar scene is that it's very telling how after he beats the hell out of himself in the bathroom, he comes back into the court. The bailiff is dragging him in. He's limping and all that stuff. And everybody's like, oh, my God, what happened to you? He says, I was beaten up by a madman, Your Honor, a desperate fool who's at the end of his pitiful rope. He said, well, what does he look like? And he had to vaguely, because he can't lie, he had to vaguely describe, you know, what he looks like, you know, tall, gangly, all that stuff, big teeth, whatever the hell. And exactly. And it makes me think of the way that the left really conducts themselves, because they always come out and they do the press conferences and they speak in mirrored terms where they are pretty much exactly describing their very plan. They describe what they're talking about, what they're doing, but they try to pin it on someone else. And that's what we're looking at here. But I would say this to everybody as we wrap this short little thing up here. I would say this. Remember, the term revenge is a dish best served cold. Do you know what that means? Because not many people do. Whenever that comes up in conversation with me, most people in the room think that you serve up revenge like, you know, you just, oh, man, you just really stuck it to them. You stuck it to the person that you really wanted to get. And, man, you got to look in their eyes and you took in all of the you savored the sight of your enemy or someone who wronged you being wronged or finally catching the bad end of karma. That's what most people think that means, but it doesn't. Revenge. Revenge is best served cold when you no longer give a shit. When you no longer care about what has been done to you. And the person that used to have control over you and used to have some kind of impact on your life is not only feeling the karmic struggle come back and hit them, but they also have to struggle with the fact that they no longer have any control over you, that they are utterly and pathetically meaningless in the overall scope of reality, especially when it comes to you. That's it. Frank Sinatra said, the best revenge is massive success. Massive success. And when success is right at the door, why the hell would people start sending bombs? Why would people on the side of success start sending bombs? And not only that, but as far as revenge being a dish best served cold, just think about Don Lemon's influence. Think about these Jake Tapper, Chris Cuomo, you know, losers. Their influence on things disappears the moment you turn off your cable box. They are nothing. They're clowns. Clowns in a circus. That's it. Bring in the clowns. Bring in the clowns. So I want to leave you with all that. Just some things to think about. Because, of course, I'm not a detective. I'm not a journalist. I am just a barefoot teller of tales, a poet in the pit, and I'm happy to have filled in for the great Tracy Beans, a good friend of mine who I am looking forward to hanging out with over the course of the weekend. After tonight's show, I'll be on the road with Rob and Matt, and we'll be going down to D.C., so if you're going to go on down there, hopefully we'll bump into each other and have a coffee or whatever the hell else happens down in D.C. We can climb the Washington Monument. That's what we can do. We can cause a big stir. Who wants to climb the Washington Monument with me? No? Nobody? Okay. Jeez. Relax. What the hell's wrong with you? I didn't mean it. Okay, so that's it for tonight, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you, Tracy, for the opportunity. Thank you, RadioInfluence.com. And thank you. Thank you to all the listeners. You've been fantastic. And with that, I bid you adieu. Goodbye.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
The racial feel in our country is bad. I'm listening to a podcast that somebody's putting out there. The guy was far right. And they basically did like a robocall podcast, which was going up against Andrew Gillum, the black guy here from Florida who's running. They delivered the podcast in blackface dialect. Is that politics? Like, to me, that's not politics. If you're delivering something in blackface dialect, I don't think that's politics. We're in a bad, bad place. You know, I had this discussion with a friend of mine the other day. And he's a friend. And we had a very civil, educated discussion about Donald Trump. It was enlightening because every time you talk about this, people get, you know, real pissed. And I said to him, as an African-American or as a black man, the hair on your neck is supposed to stand up when somebody says they're a nationalist. It's supposed to. It did before he said it, and it still does. And then, well, the supporters are going to say, well, that doesn't mean you're racist. Well, Google it. Google it. Google nationalist, then go to images and see what comes up. It's not going to be clean-cut cats, you know, sitting behind a desk with an American flag on it. It's going to be dudes in hoods and burning stuff. And there's going to be no black people there. So he came out and said, I know this word is old-fashioned. Yeah, like slavery. Stop it. You're a nationalist, and I'm supposed to not be leery of that. And it seems like there's a new movement that's, you know, developing. The only unfortunate part for me is, hey, no black people involved with it. There's no black people involved with any of the movements. And, you know, it's either he's oblivious to everything, and I don't think he's dumb. I really don't. He's not. It's either he's oblivious, and I don't think that's it, or it's just overt radical racism. It's one of the two. It can't be in the middle.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.